D.C. Woke History is a new podcast series that features lively conversations with guests focusing on historical and contemporary issues of race, gender, political activism, and culture that are often ignored in most high school classrooms and social studies textbooks. Guests will include a wide range of individuals from scholars and community activists to professional athletes, media personalities, and others. Today's guest is three-time Grammy Award-nominated Chicago rapper, Vic Mensa. Vic was originally discovered by hip-hop mogul Jay-Z and signed to Jay-Z's Roc Nation label in 2015. XXL magazine featured him on the cover of their coveted freshman class issue. Vic received a Grammy nomination for being a co-writer on the Kanye West song, All Day. He also appeared on the song Wolves, which was featured on Kanye's The Life of Pablo album, and the two performed that song on the 40th anniversary special of Saturday Night Live. In the summer of 2020, Vic released a new single titled No More Teardrops, featuring Chicago activist and poet Malik Youssef. The song tackled a number of issues, including police brutality, street crime, corruption, and the prison system. Vic Mensa is much more than just a rapper. He's a very outspoken activist. He appeared on the CNN series United Shades of America a few years back to discuss steps he's taking to end gang violence in Chicago. 2 years ago, he started a nonprofit called Save Money, Save Lives, which addresses many concerns within the inner city, from gang violence to mental health and domestic abuse. And that's just one of the many social initiatives that he's behind. Vic has always been at the forefront of lending his voice to important causes, even when his opinion was not necessarily popular with the masses. This brother is a prolific artist and an exceptional thinker. I can't wait for you to meet him. Let's begin our conversation. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, I'm here with Vic Mensa. Jay-Z called you a once-in-a-lifetime artist, which is very lofty praise. For listeners who aren't familiar with your work, can you just take a minute to tell them who Vic Mensa is, the artist and the man?
That's the age-old question, right? Mm-hmm. I'm from Southside Chicago, and I express myself through music primarily, but all types of art, and I was a little kid, I loved to paint, and as I got a bit older, I liked to write, and as, you know, things shifted and my place in society became more clear to me, the anti-establishment ethos of hip-hop spoke to me, and so I started rapping, and I never really looked back.
And you mentioned that anti-establishment ethos in hip-hop. I think I've heard you say in the past that you grew up listening to a lot of the old-school rappers when you first started coming up. Is that correct? People like some of the more conscious folks from back in the day, Public Enemy or KS1, some of those people?
Public Enemy, KRS-One. KRS-One was definitely one of my favorites, if not my favorite, when I first started rapping. He was the first rapper that I was really into. To this day, though, I mainly listen to old music. You know, I listen to a lot of Nas. Listen to a lot of Pac.
What's it about those artists in particular that really attracts you?
I mean, it's the lyricism. And in a lot of ways, that I feel like that's as good as it's gotten. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
On the same token, I listen to a lot of old soul music. You know what I'm saying? I listen to a lot of Stevie Wonder and Roberta Flack and Marvin Gaye. You know, there are just points in time when people really perfected different art forms. You know, we still look at Rembrandt and, you know, Mona Lisa as being like a peak that was reached in a certain style of art. You know, I feel like the artists I mentioned, and you know, people like Three Stacks and Outkast, and you know, that's the same way for hip hop. Not that new thing, you know, are not good, you know, but there was a level that was reached in those times.
Yeah, you know, I think about the fact that you come from Chicago, and Chicago has this, for listeners who may not be as familiar with Chicago history, Chicago has a really rich history in terms of music, right? So you talk about the soul artists of back in the day, like a Chaka Khan, a Curtis Mayfield, you have a Gilson Heron, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, you have, like, those artists who really, they meant something, like, their music stood for a bigger message, right, that resonated with the people, and it actually became the sound of the Civil Rights Movement, the Black Power era. And then you get into hip hop, you know, Chicago hip hop, and you have folks like Common coming out and what he was doing in the 90s and into the 2000s. And then, you know, it's a number of artists, Lupe Fiasco, yourself, Chance the Rapper, Kanye. And, you know, I just kind of go on and on. But Chicago really does have like this rich history of music. And it seems like you can't be an artist who's not about something if you're coming out of Chicago. Would you say that's correct?
No. Yeah, I mean, you're leaving out a big demographic.
Who am I forgetting?
I'm not going to say anybody is specifically not about something, but I'm sure if you think hard enough, you can think very popular rap music from Chicago.
That's right. Right.
But I would say that, you know, that conscious strain and just like that thoughtful, honest music, rap music is definitely a strong part of Chicago's DNA. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think it goes, like you said, it goes beyond rap music. You know, rap is a reflection of the people. Fred Hampton was assassinated at 21 years old.
Yeah.
That's the same age that, you know, many young rappers die.
Yeah.
And so that spirit has existed in Chicago, and those spirits don't die, they just multiply.
Yeah. Right, and for the listeners not familiar with Fred Hampton, very young Black Panther leader within Chicago who was assassinated, set up by the police and the FBI, and, you know, a tragic moment. So, Vic, I want to talk a little bit about your upbringing. So I know that you grew up the son of a Black father, white mother. I believe your father's from Ghana, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you've touched on this some in your music in the past. So how did the fact that you were biracial, shape you in terms of how you viewed the world and also how you viewed yourself as a Black man growing up in Chicago and just in America in general?
I was young, under 10 years old, 11 years old. I think it confused me. You know what I'm saying? It left me with a deep-seated feeling of unbelonging that has stayed with me my whole life. As I came to be, you know, a preteen, a teenager, I began to experience the world as black, you know, that's the way I was treated. You know, that's the way I was treated by teachers, schools, police. And so that's just kind of how I identify. Overall, obviously, it's like, it's a blessing, you know, to be able to have that direct connection with my ancestral homeland and to be able to call on that and have that worldly perspective. My parents are very worldly people. My parents met in Nigeria. My father's from Ghana. And so I never was raised with like some foolish sense of American exceptionalism. It occurs to me the same way that, you know, I got racist conditioning too from being in America. But being that, you know, my parents are worldly in the ways that they are and educated in the ways they are, they taught me a lot of things. So I came to have a perspective that was informed and not completely dictated by history books, which can be misleading. And when you mix that perspective with just the things that I've seen on the south side of Chicago, I think it gives me a unique viewpoint because, you know, I come from a level of like middle class, you know, and education, and also I come from a place of extreme poverty. So I learned to understand both.
How did you feel this summer when you saw the protests taking place in the wake of the killings of Breonna Taylor, George Floyd? It was a number of artists, a number of other celebrities who were, you know, really using their platforms and speaking out about the injustice that was taking place. And then some people got called out on social media if they didn't speak out. So for you, as a very thoughtful person, I would love to just kind of know what your thoughts were when all of this was happening over the summer.
It was a blur. It was like a cyclone, a hectic month. I think I looked up one month and just realized that I had been outside protesting and watching disturbing videos and reading revolutionary books and driving around, you know, looking for action every day for a month. So I mean, it felt very surreal. It felt good to see things that had been on the forefront of my mind be such a large part of the international conversation. You know, 2016, I was making music extremely critical of police, and I was outside in the mix, and people in hip hop were looking at me oftentimes like, what's he so mad about, you know? Like, what's the issue? And, you know, now you get in trouble if you don't say something. This shit, you know, you get judged for not saying something. I was being judged for saying something. So, you know, in a way that was validating, but at the same time, Chicago didn't see any major change. You know, the mayor didn't work with us at all, and hasn't reduced the police budget at all. So I was focused a lot on things like that. Like, I was looking for tangible solutions, action steps, and putting together, you know, lists of demands and ways that we could turn the chaos, the necessary chaos, into something productive.
Did you reach out directly to the mayor's office to try to make something happen?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And Vic, I want to show you something real fast. You brought up Chicago, and it's a video that I found that I just want to play a short clip from it for you. Yes. Okay. Can you see my screen?
Yeah.
President Trump has said to Chicago, the mayor of Chicago, hey, look, you've got carnage in your streets. This was another tweet just out.
Yes.
You've got carnage in your streets. I'm going to send in the feds. There's the tweet. If Chicago doesn't fix the horrible carnage going on, 228 shootings, 42 killings, up 24%, I will send in the feds. That's the expression that got to me. Can he do that?
Well, the short answer is yes. The longer answer is the feds are already there. I mean, the Justice Department is...
Okay, so that's a clip for the listeners. That's a clip from the Fox Business Network from 2017 when President Trump was talking about sending in the feds to Chicago. And then this past summer, Chicago was on President Trump's hit list of cities where he felt as though the mayors weren't doing enough and he needed to send in troops to clean up the streets, right? So my question for you is, as a native of Chicago, when you hear folks like President Trump who use Chicago to say, this is an example of our cities being out of control, when you hear a number of conservatives, Candace Owens, for example, who will say, we don't need Black Lives Matter talking about the police and injustice because of all this black-on-black crime. And it feels like Chicago becomes just like this thing that people go to, right? So as someone who's from Chicago, can you just talk to me about that in terms of like how you feel when Chicago is just being kind of used as a scapegoat by a lot of politicians?
There's an image, I believe it was from Ferguson, where a group of police officers sets a police car on fire and then disappears, and news reports it as rioters and protesters burning police cars. I think it's a brilliant strategy. Set a fire and hide your hand. You know what I'm saying? And it falls in line with the American principle of revisionist history. Chicago is a microcosm for every hood in America because of what they've done to us. Chicago is an example of what under-resourced people living in poverty and conditioned by violence go through. So when you have someone threatening to send in troops to Chicago, oh, you mean the same troops that destroyed the Middle East? So are you threatening to send your weaponized arm of destruction to fix destruction? Now, we know that's not a real solution to anything.
Right.
The problems in Chicago are based on lack of resources. The problems in Chicago are based on generation upon generation of starving. The problems in Chicago are based on hundreds of years of brutalization of black bodies. That shit seeps into your psyche. And it's convenient for white supremacists and Republicans to point to the issue as if they didn't create it. It's the same thing that they do in the Middle East. They say, look at this terrible terrorism, as if they didn't run rampant through Iraq and Syria and destroy people's entire way of living. So that's what they do when they look at our communities. They say, look at this violence and this brutality, as if they haven't been beating, chaining, and lynching us for hundreds of years.
Talk about some of the work that you're doing to address these problems and find solutions to these problems back in Chicago.
Yeah, man. You know, something I've been doing for a while is called Street Medics. It's where I train and equip first responders in Chicago's most violent neighborhoods. Each youth, teachers, just community members, how to stop the flow of blood from a gunshot wound. So, you know, we've definitely saved real lives with that. And my plan is to expand that into a privatized ambulance force. I'm reaching Mercedes to get some sprinters donated. You know, and put like one of these street medics ambulances, have about five of them, put one in each of Chicago's most violent neighborhoods, what we call the red zones. So when something happens, they can be there within 2 minutes. You know, most people pass away from lack of access to the medical resources they need. Another thing I'm working on is a campaign of mass employment for next summer. And I am interested to see what Chicago's summertime would look like if 250,000 youth between 14 and 24 had gainful employment, had real job that summer, you know, where they were making good money. Because what I've learned is that when you compare communities of different races in different places, and you even out the unemployment rate, the crime rate and the murder rate follow. Crime and murder are a result of lack of basic societal needs, from comprehensive education, you know, to stable housing and employment. These are the things that actually increase safety, combat crime, not the feds. The feds are the reason crime exists. The feds are the biggest criminals.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can pay, you're gonna pay taxpayer money so that you can bring in criminals to stop crime.
Right. And this makes sense.
Sounds like you're finessing. Sounds like somebody's getting paid. Like, make no mistake, police been getting paid overtime for all this shit that they've been doing. All this brutality that we've been seeing in response to protest against their brutality, don't get it fucked up. They getting paid overtime.
And don't you have a program that you do, like some type of self-defense program for women? Is that correct?
That's actually still in the works.
Okay.
But that is a plan that you just reminded me. I mean, go back on.
All right, so in the past, you touched on several issues in your music, from domestic violence and drug abuse to mental health and even suicidal thoughts. You have a new project which came out not too long ago, the V-Tape. So what are some things that listeners can expect to hear from this new EP?
This new music is just honest, man. It's just, you know, me addressing pretty much anything that somebody would want to ask. And you know, all the elephants in the room. And just, you know, some of my best writing, some of my illest bars and best pen work. That's what I've been focused on.
And then my final question for you, as a young black man, do you feel like you have more responsibility when you get in the booth and you record music? That like, and this kind of comes back to the point we were making at the beginning, right, with Chicago artists. Do you feel like you have to say something every time you put out a new project? Or can you just make music just to be fun and, you know, turn up in the club and, you know, have Billboard hits?
Responsibility. I think black people should do as they damn please. For me, the knowledge that I have makes it so that ignorance would be a choice for me. And that's not the choice I'm going to make.
Well, Vic, this has been a pleasure talking with you. You know, again, congratulations on the new project. Much respect for all the work that you're doing in the community back in Chicago and just in the world in general. We need more young brothers like you who are doing positive things. So thank you so much and keep up the good work.
Appreciate you, God.
And that's our show for the week. Special thanks to today's guest, Vic Mensa. And thank you, the listening audience. If you like what you heard, please check out future episodes. Our next guests will be mental health experts Dr. Kendall Jackson and Kanan Jackson. A special shout out, as always, to Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv. Have a blessed day.